I have to warn you, I come from a family of criers. We cry when we're angry. We cry when we're happy, when we're confused. Sometimes we cry when we're sad. We always cry when we finally tell the truth. And we especially cry when we experience beauty. And so I confess that I cried during the prelude. And my knees shook a little. And despite our culture's rule about the privacy of tears, I have not yet been domesticated. I know this is a time of year when not everyone feels jolly. And perhaps you bring your own grief and griefs here today. I think that this beginning of the season of hope, the theme for this congregation's month together, requires that we start exactly where we are. We need hope because of the grief. I think that in the growing cold, memories surface and some feel the loss of whatever was once familiar. I know that on Christmas Eve, when I have looked out on all of those beautiful candlelight faces, I feel both the presence and the absence of particular people who have passed away. And I savor all of the faces of those who are present, knowing that next year some will be missing, including myself. So I bring a story that surprised me. It came up yesterday, just arose in my mind. 35 years ago today, my husband's business and our entire source of income were destroyed by an arson fire. The call came around midnight, and I watched my husband on TV frantically using bolt cutters to remove the locks on the grates so that the firefighters could get in. And after the fire, when I think back to that time, I can still smell the smoke. I can still feel the grit of broken glass under my feet. And I especially remember the sight of a telephone melted like black taffy coming down the wall. On the night of the fire, I felt angry, helpless, full of uncertainty. But because of my 8-year-old son and his visiting sleepover pal, I kept my game face on. After a sleepless night wondering whether or not we would have money for milk, I got dressed up. And I went to my church in Canton, just as usual. We were brand new UUs then, and we didn't know most of the people in the pews. And despite the presence of strangers, I began to sob as soon as my body relaxed into the pew cushion. Have you ever been surprised by grief as you relaxed into the womb of this sanctuary? Have tears come during communal singing or silence? I have often heard about that experience of release in the pew from many Unitarian Universalists over the years. Many people tell me they sit in the way back because they don't want anybody to see them cry. And those of us who do weep openly do it quietly for the most part. An Indigenous teacher, Martine Prechtel, lectures and writes about the silence of Western grieving as compared to the keening and wailing of grieving in his community. I was introduced to his work by my Buddhist teacher many, many years ago as I was preparing the funeral service for Jackie, who was 5 years old when she died of a brain tumor. In that eulogy, I quoted Prechtel when I said that the sound of our grief would paddle her small boat to the shore of stars where the ancestors were waiting to receive her. I have returned to Martine Prechtel's teaching about grief in the last couple of years, especially as I partner climate scientists in their spiritual journey through despair. We read books together and we heard what the climate scientists had to say and know that we are past the point of no return for many of the feedback effects of climate change, global warming. And many of those books, Joanna Macy among them, advised that grief was a necessary step in the work of coming awake to the global tragedy of a warming planet and the inevitable economic collapse that's coming as we face the limits of consuming more than 1.5 planets worth of resources, and the likely rise of authoritarianism in the wake of such chaos and disruption. And I've been trying to stay awake to that grief, my own, my family's, my community's, this nation's, and the world's grief. In a sermon, staying awake to my grief and sharing the opinion of one of the scientists saying, if you're not crying, you're not awake. And I felt it fully in my body at that moment. And my voice shook and there were some tears. I may have had to blow my nose, but I spoke with the voice of a heart broken open. Immediately after that service, I received an email from a relatively new parishioner who really didn't know me. I'd been on sabbatical. And she wrote me an email that said, I'm really worried about your depression, Martha. We had a good conversation over soup in her kitchen, and it did end in both of us in tears as we knew what her 6,000-foot home and heated pool would mean to her children and grandchildren. And I've continued to share the facts and feelings about climate change with others, and I'm always met with bromides of hope and some gentle reminders that I'm not being congruent with my email sign-off. Remember joy. I do not instruct them that joy is not dependent on arising conditions. And maybe you have noticed in the last tragedies that have befallen us in the last months, notice how quickly public conversations shift from the feelings of grief to thoughts and prayers. There's very little embodiment in those people who send their thoughts and prayers. And there's a quick shift to seeking the causes of the loss and the opportunities of the loss and the blaming. Feelings move to analysis in the blink of an eye before a single public tear has been shed. I notice the absence of the sound of grief. And I do notice voices cracking in the effort to control emotions that are sticking in the throat. And so I wonder if we're not stuck in the disembodied state of despair as described by the poet David White. Remember, he said, despair is the sweet but illusory abstraction of leaving the body while still inhabiting it, so we can stop the body from feeling anymore. Despair is the place we go when we no longer want to make a home in this world. I know that the release of grief requires a letting go of that self-control, letting go, letting the body do what it needs to do without concern for appearance or propriety. Anyone who's watched a birth or given birth knows that moment when release is the only thing possible and the body knows what to do. And the last thing one cares about is propriety. And as long as we remain disconnected from that body's wisdom of grief, we are actually mammals playing dead. And playing dead is baked into the cake of Western culture. I'd like you to listen to the decree made by 62 bishops in the year 589 of the Common Era that forbids crying at funerals. The bodies of all religious who, called by God, depart from this life should be carried to the grave amid psalms and the voices of the chanters only. But we absolutely forbid burial songs, which are commonly sung for the dead, and the accompaniment of the corpse by the family and dependents of the deceased, beating their breast. Therefore, if the bishop is able, we should not hesitate to forbid all Christians to do this. Clerics, too, should not act in any other way, for it is fitting that throughout the world, deceased Christians should be buried thus. It should be a happy time. The deceased is going to heaven. Without any regard for the people left behind. And now, when so much of our culture and our planet is dying and dead, we are stuck in despair that deprives us of breath, emotion, liveliness, and agency. Prechtel writes, "Grief expressed out loud, whether in or out of character, unchoreographed and honest, for someone we have lost, or a country or a home we have lost, is in itself the greatest praise we could ever give them. Grief is praise, because it is the natural way that love honors what it misses." Prechtel teaches the story of the love that the loved one must be told on the night before it is buried. Surrounded by candles, people tell the story of that person all the way back through the generations, all the way back through all of the ancestors. And then there must be singing, and you must sing your mother, your father, your brothers and sisters home to that beach of stars. When that grief is unexpressed, those souls of the dead stay here as hungry ghosts. I know these ghosts. They keep me shopping, eating when I'm not hungry, drinking, and consuming mindless media. Grief unexpressed becomes blame and anger and a source of violence that leads to war. What I know is most of us do not have the communal space to actually have such a ritual, the telling of stories all night long, making sure that the origins of that person are told and sung. We don't have a community to do that. Prechtel shares a story of one of his Western students trying to do that with his Scandinavian Lutheran family. I am still Lutheran, I have to say. I grew up Lutheran, and all the funerals of my family included the theology that their baptism was a baptism into the crucifixion. Their names were not mentioned more than once, and their story was not told. We did sing, however. But this young man wanted to bring that story telling to his mother's to praise his mother on her way into the earth. And he stood all night long with one candle by himself, telling her stories and weaving a string around a bead. And when he came to the graveside, he dropped, and the coffin was being closed, he dropped that bead into the coffin. And suddenly, he dropped to his knees, totally in wild, grieving energy. He was crying and singing in grief as his mother's coffin was lowered into the ground, and he refused to leave the grave. His Lutheran pastor called an ambulance. His aunties told him that crying would not bring his mother back, and he answered, "I wasn't crying to bring her back. I was weeping to help her get where she was going. Get where she was going to meet the ancestors faster and easier." When he explained to them how grief was a good thing for both the dead and the living, there were only crickets. And so we know that appropriating someone else's culture's rituals without grounding is actually quite dangerous, because ritual has power. And I know you're going to be entering lots of rituals of this season, some you look forward to and some you dread. And those rituals have power. And I'm convinced that you will be able to prepare the way for grieving as praise by daily practice of coming to your senses. Prechtel writes, "Even in the strangely convoluted, war-strapped, monetized, boxed life with modernity's polarized spiritual failure at the wheel, people could still live differently, noticing life's details, expressing more compassionately, and similarly create life when they talk or listen to someone who takes the courage to let their loss turn to grief and grief into beauty." And so I hope that in this growing darkness, we can discover that the rituals of Advent, Solstice, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, bring us into a powerful space where we can allow ourselves to let go. We can dazzle our senses with good food and beautiful colors and the sounds of singing, and especially the beautiful light that reflects from the eyes of the person in front of us. Sometimes there are even rainbows there. And by returning to our senses, we will be able to speak with a new kind of eloquence. And when the time comes to grieve, we will have become larger, and we'll have much better stories to tell about the days and the weeks and the months and the years gone by. And we will be able to make the sound of grief. We rarely hear it. If you listen to funerals in the Middle East, you can hear that keening. It comes from low and comes up high. I think if we pay attention to our senses now, we will be able to bring our whole selves so that we might resonate with the grief that becomes praise and gratitude. And so let us begin. Let us begin in a world without end, knowing that someday we too will be paddled ashore by the sounds of grief and praise. Let us begin with the song of praise for the earth forever turning. It's in your hymnal, the gray hymnal, number 163, for the earth forever turning.